Hey guys, it's your girl Oge, and welcome back to the Simply Vet podcast for undergraduate veterinary students. And on this podcast, you'll be getting summarized audio content from your working lecture materials. So, is it anatomy, physiology, or biochemistry, or even other related veterinary courses that you come across during your undergraduate years? Guess what? Simply Vet podcast has got you covered. All you need just to do now is to hit the subscribe button on your Google Podcast app so that you get notified on each episode release. So, let's get on board. It's so good to have you guys today once again, and we are going to be giving an audio summary of the physiology of body fluids. And we're going to follow through these three skeleton. One, body types of body fluids. Two, how the body loses fluid. And three, how the body balances fluid loss and equal fluid intake. And the three ways in which the body balances it are: one, electrolyte balance. Two, water balance. And three, pH balance, that is acid-base balance. So, get your pen and your book ready. Let's get started. Okay guys, in a quick summary, when you hear body fluids, what quickly comes to your mind is water. Good. And water is the most abundant constituent of our body fluids, while the rest are solutes and electrolytes. And these body fluids are distributed in the intracellular and extracellular compartment. So let's quickly look into the different types of body fluids we have. One, we have the intracellular fluid, and this fluid lies within the cell, and it's the principal component of the cytoplasm. Second is the extracellular fluid, and this fluid surrounds all the cells of the body. Third is interstitial fluid, and this type of extracellular is a type of extracellular fluid, and it exists between adjacent cells. Fourth is intravascular fluid, and it is the plasma that is surrounding blood vessel. And the fifth is transcellular fluid, and this fluid is also called lymph. Okay, so let's quickly look into, okay, I want to just note this equation in your mind. Fluid intake equals to equal loss equals to balance. So there's a way the body balances fluid intake, and there's a way it balances an equal fluid loss. This whole process is what you are going to see in how the body balances its body fluid. But before we get into it, let's quickly look into the ways in which the body loses fluid. Four different common ways in which the body loses fluid are: one, insensible loss of water, and this arises from diffusion from the respiratory tract and evaporation from the skin, so it's an unconscious process. The second way is loss in sweat, which arises from physical activity or change in temperature. The third is loss in feces, maybe at times when one has diarrhea. And the fourth is loss in kidney, that is from the activity of the kidney. Okay. So guys, like I said before, there are three different ways through the body balances its body fluid. And one is the electrolyte balance, two is water balance, three is acid-base balance or pH balance. So we are going to be starting with the electrolyte balance. Okay. Electrolyte basically is a mineral that is dissociated from a salt, and it carries an electric charge. And electrolytes are chemicals dissolved in the body fluid. Their concentration in the body is controlled by a variety of hormones and taste, and they are important for the cells to function. And the examples of electrolytes in the body in terms of body function, and the six of them are: sodium ion, potassium ion, chloride ion, bicarbonate ion, calcium ion, and phosphorus ion. So let's quickly look into the ways through which the body maintains electrolyte balance in the intracellular, extracellular, and interstitial compartment. Okay, so we said hormones regulate electrolyte balance, and we are going to look into four different hormones, one of which is aldosterone, two is angiotensin II hormone, three is AMP, that is atrial natriuretic peptide, and fourth is parathyroid hormone. Don't worry guys, I'm going to leave the names of these hormones in the episode description, so do be able to check it. Okay, so aldosterone basically maintains the levels of sodium ion in the body fluid, and it does this by stimulating the sodium to potassium ATPase pump, which is located in the basolateral side of the cortical collecting duct, precisely the P cells. And the way it is that Na is being reabsorbed while potassium is being secreted in its exchange. And the lack of an excess of aldosterone, let me rephrase. Deficiency of both sodium ion and potassium ion could lead to Addison disease and Coombs syndrome. So let me quickly explain what they mean. In Addison disease, there is marked loss of sodium ion and accumulation of potassium ion, while in Coombs syndrome, there is accumulation of sodium ion and depletion of potassium ion. Okay, the next hormone we have is angiotensin II, and it functions in raising the blood pressure in conditions of low BP or low blood volume, and it is one of the body's potent sodium ion retention hormone. It stimulates the adrenal cortex to release aldosterone, which in turn reabsorbs sodium ion and increases blood volume, and also directly increases blood volume by stimulating the PPG to release ADA. So I hope this is not really confusing, so just note down the main points from this. The third hormone we have is the AMP, that is the atrial natriuretic peptide, and it is a peptide that is released by the cells of the cardiac atria in conditions of increased blood volume. It inhibits the renal tubules, that is the collecting duct, from reabsorbing water and sodium ion, thus it increases urinary excretion. Okay, the fourth of the hormones are PTH, that is the parathyroid hormone, and it's secreted by the parathyroid gland, and it functions in regulating the levels of calcium ion, phosphorus, and magnesium ion in the fluid. And let's quickly note the defects or the deficiencies in this calcium, phosphorus, and magnesium. So, a decrease in calcium ion intake causes an increase in parathyroid secretion, which promotes increased reabsorption of calcium ion in the LOH and DCH, that is, in the loop of Henle and in the distal convoluted tubule, while an increase in calcium ion causes a vice versa of this. Okay, a decrease in phosphorus level causes parathyroid hormone to promote bone resorption, and this allows excess phosphorus to move from the bone into extracellular fluid. Why an increase in phosphorus level in extracellular fluid above normal causes the parathyroid hormone to stimulate less reabsorption in the proximal convoluted tubule, leading to its loss in the urine. And finally, reduction of extracellular fluid in magnesium level causes parathyroid hormone to stimulate its reabsorption at the LOH, that is the loop of Henle, while an excess amount of magnesium in the ECF inhibits its reabsorption at the LOH, thereby it is being lost in the urine. So guys, just listen carefully to all of this and jot down the main points. So let's quickly look into water balance. So guys, let's quickly look into the clinical abnormalities of electrolyte imbalance. And here we're going to look at conditions of sodium ion imbalance, potassium imbalance, calcium imbalance, magnesium imbalance, and phosphorus imbalance. So get your pen and paper to work. Okay, so in conditions of sodium imbalance, there are two types of abnormalities. We have hypernatremia and hyponatremia. Okay, another hypernatremia, this occurs when there is excess sweating during exercise, for example, or when you drink water that is containing a lot of salt. The result of this is that there is elevation of plasma sodium ion level above normal due to the increased osmolarity of sodium ion in the ECF, that is in the extracellular fluid, and it results in loss of water from extracellular fluid. And these conditions, like I said, occurs when the body fails to release AGH or during renal diseases of the kidney. The thing is that the kidney becomes unresponsive to ADH, that is antidiuretic hormone, okay? And so water is not conserved in this condition. Water is being lost and sodium ion is being reabsorbed. So in this condition, there is excess sodium in the ECA, that is in extracellular fluid, and this condition results to hypernatremia. The second condition of sodium imbalance you have is hyponatremia, and here there is decreased plasma sodium ion level below normal, okay, while there is excess addition of water to extracellular fluid. So in this condition, there is resulting loss of sodium ion from extracellular fluid and excess addition of water to extracellular fluid, okay? And in hyponatremia, okay, it occurs following diarrhea, okay? Vomition, overuse of diuretics, okay? You also observe it in Addison disease, where aldosterone is lacking, you understand? So there is, or when the kidney is default or something like that, or diseased, okay, from reabsorbing sodium ion. You also observe it when there is excess ADH, that is antidiuretic hormone secretion, which results to more water addition, and finally results to reabsorption, that is high rehydration. So in all, in hyponatremia, there is reduced sodium ion levels in ECF, and there is excess amount of water level in ECF, you understand? So this is, you will observe it when you drink a lot of water, you're always feeling rehydrated, you want to drink water ahead. So at that point, if care is not taken, that person could have hyponatremia. Okay, let's quickly look into the conditions of potassium imbalance. And here we have two conditions. One is hyperkalemia. The second one is hypokalemia. So, hyperkalemia, basically, there is increased plasma potassium ion concentration above normal, okay, in the ECF. And it is associated with kidney failure, where potassium levels build up and cannot be excreted in the urine. And this, the way to correct this is that there will be performed emergency dialysis to remove this potassium ion, and the resulting condition is that the person will be having frequent myocardial disturbances. Okay, so in hypokalemia, there is reduced potassium ion concentration below normal in ECA, and it results from vomition, diarrhea, and the use of
diuretics.
What the person is going to notice is that person having frequent muscular weaknesses, okay, and electrocardiography abnormalities. Okay, with that being said, let's quickly look into the conditions of calcium ion imbalance. And there are two conditions here. We have hypercalcemia and hypocalcemia.
In hyperglycemia, there is increased plasma calcium ion concentration above normal and is due to parathyroid hormone tumor, excess vitamin D intake, okay? And it results in kidney stone and depression. In hypoglycemia, there is reduced plasma calcium ion concentration in the ECA due to deficit of vitamin D or lack of parathyroid hormone. And the person is going to notice weakness and muscular spasm.
Okay. The next condition we have is magnesium imbalance. And there are two types as well. We have hypermagnesemia and hypomagnesemia. In hypermagnesemia, there is increased plasma magnesium ion concentration in ECF, and it results from reduction from its excretion, okay, in the kidney, and also results when there is excess intake from it in the diet, and also hyperparathyroidism also results to high magnesium ion levels. And there will be frequent nausea, heart rhythmic disturbances, muscular pain, to mention but a few. In hypomagnesemia, in this imbalance, there is reduction in plasma magnesium ion below normal, and it is a result of its deficiency from the diet, okay? Inability of the intestine to absorb it, okay? And there will be frequent cramps and heart rhythmic disturbances. So the last but not the least imbalance we're going to look at is phosphorus imbalance, and we have hyperphosphatemia and hypophosphatemia. In hyperphosphatemia, there is increased level of phosphorus in the ECF above normal, while in hypophosphatemia, there is reduced level of phosphorus in the ECF. And this causes a reduction in bone mineralization. That is, hypophosphatemia, excess phosphorus move from the bone into the extracellular fluid to recover the loss. So guys, this is the 5 important electrolytes you need to know about and their imbalances. That is, sodium ion imbalance, potassium ion imbalance, calcium imbalance, magnesium imbalance, and phosphorus imbalance. Okay guys, let's quickly look into taste stimulation, that is how the urge of drinking water come about. And there are 4 processes that result to taste stimulation. One is extracellular dehydration, and it is caused by reduced ECF volume, that is reduced extracellular fluid volume, and this causes increased rate of drinking water. The second one we have is hemorrhage and low cardiac output, and this causes low blood volume, which stimulates thirst mechanism for you to drink water. The third one we have is intracellular dehydration, which is caused by increased extracellular fluid concentration, and you notice it when after injection of hypertonic sodium chloride or sucrose solution into the blood, and this results in osmotic removal of water from intracellular fluid into the renal tubules, thereby dehydrating the animal or the individual. So the test mechanism is initiated to dilute the extracellular fluid to normal. The last form of taste stimulation is dryness of mouth, and it occurs as a result of extracellular fluid or intracellular fluid dehydration or injection of atropine, okay? And this prevents salivation. This atropine prevents salivation during surgery, and this could cause taste stimulation. So guys, these are the 4 main processes of taste stimulation: extracellular dehydration, hemorrhage and low cardiac output, intracellular dehydration, and dryness of mouth. Okay guys, you're really making progress. We've looked at electrolyte balance, water balance. So the last balance we're going to look into is how the body regulates or balances its pH. Okay, and there are three systems. One we have is the acid base buffer system, the respiratory system, and the renal system. Okay, so I want you to just note this comparison between these three systems. One, the acid-base buffer system is extremely efficient, okay, because it takes only a second for it to make adjustments to the body pH. The respiratory system, like the respiratory tract, can adjust blood pH upward in minutes by exhaling CO2 from the body. And the last one, which is the renal system, can adjust blood pH through excretion of hydrogen ions and conservation of bicarbonate ions. So I hope you've noted how these three systems work in balancing the body pH. So let's take a look at them one after the other. The acid-base buffer system in the body includes intracellular proteins, phosphates, and bicarbonate carbonic acid buffer systems. So we are going to be starting with the intracellular proteins. It is good to know that nearly all proteins in the body can function as buffers, since they are made up of amino acid, which contains positively charged groups and negatively charged carboxyl groups. And these charged regions of these molecules can bind hydrogen and hydroxide ions, thus they function as buffers. So for example, hemoglobin is a principal protein inside of red blood cells, and during conversion of CO2, that is carbon dioxide, into bicarbonate, hydrogen ions liberated in these reactions are buffered by hemoglobin to help maintain normal pH. So that is how intracellular proteins help in buffering the acid-base system. Okay, the next acid-base buffer system we have is bicarbonate carbonic acid buffer system, and they are present in the blood in a ratio 20:1 in normal pH blood levels. So since bicarbonate is 20 times more than carbonic acid in the blood, it is necessary because it will help in buffering changes that would make the blood more acidic, and that is why it is useful. While carbonic acid in the blood, in carbonic acid levels in the blood, they are controlled by the expiration of CO2 through the lungs. So that is all about the bicarbonate carbonic acid buffer systems. Okay, so let's look into the second way through the body balances its body pH, and it is through the respiratory system. So let's look into the process. By regulating blood levels of carbonic acid in the blood, CO2 in the blood readily reacts with water to form carbonic acid, and this brings the levels of CO2 and carbonic acid in the blood to equal. Okay, so in conditions when the CO2 levels in the blood rises, the excess CO2 reacts with water to form additional carbonic acid, and this releases hydrogen ion that actually lowers the blood pH and brings it down to acidity. So this condition explains acidosis, that is when there are high levels of acid in the body. And it is good to know that once this is detected, okay, the chemoreceptors of the pulmonary alveoli, okay, signals the respiratory tract to exhale more CO2 from the lungs, and this will help to increase respiratory rate and thereby reducing blood levels of carbonic acid. until pH is set to normal. And this is also the same when levels of alkalosis, that is when there are high levels of bicarbonate acid in the blood, the same process will be followed. Finally guys, let's quickly look into the disorders of the acid to base balance system, and there are four. One is the metabolic acidosis, also known as primary bicarbonate deficiency. Two, metabolic alkalosis, also known as primary bicarbonate excess. Three, respiratory acidosis, also known as primary carbonic acid or CO2 excess. And last one is respiratory alkalosis, also known as primary carbonic acid / CO2 deficiency. So let's quickly take a look at them one after the other. Okay, so metabolic acidosis occurs when the blood is too acidic due to the excessive loss of bicarbonate ions. In the following scenario causes metabolic acidosis. 1. When there is decrease of hydrogen ion excretion from the kidney, it inhibits bicarbonate conservation in the kidney. 2. When there is excessive loss of bicarbonate ions via the GIT tract, that is the gastrointestinal tract, due to diarrhea. 3. In diabetes mellitus or diabetic ketoacidosis, where glucose is absent from metabolism, thus there is excessive breakdown of fat in the liver to ketone bodies, and the accumulation of these ketone bodies lead to high levels of acid in the body. And lastly, injection of certain drug substances, for example, acyl salicylic acid, which if taken in overdose could cause acidosis. Okay. And there are four. Next up we have metabolic alkalosis, and it is the opposite of metabolic acidosis. So in metabolic alkalosis, it occurs when the blood is too alkaline, that is pH above 7.45, due to excessive bicarbonate retention, and it could be caused by the following scenario. 1. Hyperaldosteronism, where excessive secretion of aldosterone causes increased secretion of hydrogen ion into the renal tubules, causing alkalosis. 2. Overuse of diuretics causes an increase in bicarbonate reabsorption in the body, also leading to alkalosis. 3. Injection of certain alkaline drugs such as Na2CO3, that is sodium bicarbonate, for a long time could also lead to alkalosis. And lastly, emesis, okay, which results in excess loss of hydrochloric acid of the stomach, could also lead to what? Alkalosis. Okay, the third acid to base disorders is respiratory acidosis, and this occurs when the blood is overly acidic due to an excess of carbonic acid, which results from too much CO2 in the blood, and it results from any interference with respiration, for example decreased rate of pulmonary ventilation, pneumonia and emphysema could lead to respiratory acidosis, and it causes an increase in carbonic acid and hydrogen ion concentration, hence increasing the blood pH. The last disorders of the acid to base balance is respiratory alkalosis, and it occurs due to hyperventilation by the lungs, okay, and this causes a decrease in levels of CO2 in the extracellular fluid, thus increasing pH. So for example, hyperventilation results from ascent to high altitude, okay, and in this condition, there is decreased level of oxygen, which stimulates increased respiration and excessive loss of CO2. Also, fear, okay, high levels of catecholamines, and even overdose of aspirin all leads to respiratory alkalosis. So I hope with this explanation you can be able to differentiate between the four disorders, which are metabolic acidosis, metabolic alkalosis, which occurs in the kidney, and respiratory acidosis, respiratory alkalosis, which is regulated by the respiratory system. So guys, do not to note these differences. Okay guys, we've come to the end of today's episode, which is on the physiology of the body fluids. So I hope with this summary you can be able to jot down some things and watch out for next episode. And don't forget to share to your friends who might need this. Bye for now.